Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Realms of Ghosts and Magic, Fey Witch Chronicles, Book 1, by J.S. Malcolm. Narrated by Rachel DeLude. Chapter 1. I hesitate before knocking on the door of the old brick townhouse. It's not fear that makes me pause. More than likely, I'll just be dealing with a ghost and they don't scare me. Hell, half the time they want to leave every bit as much as they're wanted gone. Instead, it's the realization that I forgot my pepper spray. I have no idea, really, who will answer the door. Well, I mean, I know his name is Dean Richardson, and I know he got my number from the flyer I put up at Grimoire. Still, anyone can tear off a little paper tab and make a phone call. Anyone can say their house is haunted. On the other hand, only an idiot would agree to meet with a total stranger. At night. Alone. Right, I'm the idiot. I remind myself that Dean Richardson sounded fine on the phone. And, right now, the hairs don't stand up on the back of my neck. I feel no sense of threat or looming danger. I may not have a psychic sense quite as keen as my sister's, but I'm not without survival instincts. Besides, a girl's gotta eat and the rent is due next week. And life is never without risks. So, I knock on the door and hope for the best. A few moments pass before I hear footsteps. A man says, "Who is it?" Actually, he sounds nervous too, but that's probably a good sign. After all, living with a paranormal entity typically has that effect. "Cassie," I say, "I'm here about the cleaning." I wasn't sure what to call my new business, so I decided on Supernatural Cleaning Service. Even for a flyer tacked to a bulletin board in a New Age bookstore, it seemed like a good idea to go subtle. I wasn't sure if advertising demon removal or evil entity ejection might raise too many eyebrows. After all, half the population doesn't even believe in ghosts, never mind the other intruders trespassing in this realm. And it wasn't like I could afford a marketing team. Provided I survive getting my business off the ground, I can always work on my branding later. The door creaks open, an eyeball peeks out, and a chain slides back. Dean Richardson opens the door to reveal himself as looking pretty much what he sounded like on the phone. White guy, 40s, short hair, and glasses. A businessman, basically. Although he must either be into New Age stuff or be somehow connected with the witch community if he saw my flyer. My guess is he used to be a New Ager, with sage burning and crystal healing hidden somewhere in his past. "Thanks for coming," he says. "Sure, no problem." I step inside and look around. From what I can see, it's a basic old Richmond townhouse. A staircase starts to my right, leading the way upstairs, although it hooks left after a few steps, so I can't see past the corner. Beyond the little bit of hallway, there's a living room with hardwood floors, devoid of furniture at the moment. Past that, there's a dining room featuring a dated light fixture, and beyond that, no doubt, the kitchen. But what I see isn't really what matters. It's what I feel. Not good. My skin tingles with irritation, and I fight the urge to scratch as an edginess starts to build. Shit, it's not a ghost. It can't be. Still, I decide there's no point in going there just yet. "So, tell me what's going on." I adopt what I hope sounds like the tone of an experienced paranormal professional. Dean raises his eyebrows, then blows out a puff of air. "Well, like I said on the phone, I'm kind of at a loss. I bought the place 6 months ago, investment property, basically. Since then, I've had 3 tenants. All of them thought it was worth breaking their lease to get out of here."
"Did they say why?"
He shakes his head. "They didn't say anything. They just left. Fast. In case you were wondering, I chose not to litigate."
Definitely not a good sign.
Most of the time, people don't even notice ghosts. And those that do often aren't all that bothered. I suspect that's because the same ability allowing certain people to see ghosts brings with it the sense that ghosts are just people who've passed away. On the other hand, pretty much no one can live with demons, and you wouldn't want to meet those who feel differently. I've met a few, and it didn't go well.
"What do you think your tenants might have experienced?" Dean shakes his head.
I'm not sure.
But you said you think the place might be haunted. Have you seen a ghost? Dean averts his eyes.
Not exactly, but I have, well...
His words trail off, and I wait for him to resume. He doesn't. Had some bad experiences, I say, which, of course, he's hesitant to admit, since he still tried to rent the place out. I get it. Apparently, Dean decides that the best course is to keep things moving.
So how does this work exactly? Do you, like, bring in a team?
That he thinks I might need a team doesn't give me the best feeling. But what the hell, I'm here. I shake my head. No team, just me. This seems to stop him.
No special equipment?
I know what he means, of course, like in Ghostbusters. You have to love the concepts of those movies, with all of those electronic gizmos for detecting paranormal intruders and sucking them up into convenient little traps. So cute. Nope, just me, I say again. Dean studies me dubiously, which is somewhat understandable, given that at 5'4 and 120 pounds, there's not all that much of me. Also, like my sister, Autumn, I look 10 years younger than I am. That's a veil witch thing, we've come to realize, one of the traits shared by those of us capable of ejecting paranormal trespassers from our realm. Another is a certain level of immunity to the toxins involved in taking out the supernatural trash. While we can get hurt, we can't die, at least for a certain period of time. Apparently, that aspect can change without warning. Comforting. But Dean doesn't know anything about veil witches, and, right now, I can understand why it might not be reassuring for him to be standing across from someone who looks like a raven-haired teenager. He frowns, confused.
Are you psychic or something?
Or something. Dean cocks his head, and I can see where this is going. He expected more explanation. I get that, too. But I'm not about to tell him that I'm basically the human equivalent of a supernatural guard dog. I think it's safe to assume that the concept would be lost on anyone other than my fellow witches. So, payment, I say. Dean brings his eyes back to mine.
200, right?
Yep, definitely a businessman. 3, I say. Cash, please. It's not like I didn't tell him that up front, but Dean looks reluctant. Sure, he expected a van with a nifty logo, a team in coveralls and high-tech gizmos. Instead, he got me.
How will I know?
You'll know. Plus, there's the money-back guarantee. I flash him a smile. I threw the money-back guarantee part into the fine print of my ad, although I have to admit I was winging it there. After all, one could easily claim that nothing changed even if I knew otherwise. And it's not like I could re-haunt the house again. At least, I don't think I could. I've never tried. But it's a new business. Really new. As in, Dean is my first client, but I'm not about to tell him that either. A few moments pass as Dean considers his options, which are basically zero, so I'm not bothered. The fact that my skin has gone from tingling to crawling tells me he's got a serious problem on his hands. A problem that I seriously doubt a psychic could deal with. Add to that, I can't imagine one being dumb enough to try. Any true psychic would steer clear. So Dean has me or no one, and he needs tenants or he's going to be carrying the mortgage of an empty townhouse. Finally, he opens his wallet and hands me 3 $100 bills.
Sweet.
I slip the cash into my pocket.
So what now?
He says. I step back and open the door. Now it's on me. Don't worry. I've got this. He opens his mouth to speak again, but then thinks better of it. His cash is gone, either way, and he needs a problem solved. I close the door behind him and get ready for my first day of supernatural freelance work. Chapter 2. Sniffing out a ghost usually isn't very difficult. They're habitual beings. Way more habitual, in fact, than their living counterparts. As a rule, ghosts tend to repeat a certain set of actions every day. That differs from ghost to ghost, of course. Some walk from kitchen to dining room every evening at sunset like clockwork. Some appear in bathroom mirrors every morning. Some hang out in a particular room, almost never leaving. There's always a reason for these actions, although most of the time we can't know what those are. A trauma, a memory, a longing. Each case is different. I've been observing ghosts for a long time now. In fact, since I was a child. Our old house held the ghost of a woman who spent most of her time gazing out from my parents' bedroom window. My parents remained completely unaware of her, as did my sister, who hadn't yet learned to see ghosts. I tried telling my family a few times about that ghost and others, but they didn't take me seriously. So, eventually, I kept things to myself. Then, when I was 11, I became something of a ghost myself. As far as the normal world was concerned, I went missing. Just another kid nabbed for whatever reason, presumably by some deranged wacko. I'd been with my sister at the time at a neighborhood park in the evening, so Autumn had been the only witness. Although she wasn't much of a witness, given that all she could recall was a vague memory of having seen flickering lights. A few conspiracy theorists chalked that up to a UFO encounter. Most, including the police, attributed my sister's hazy memory to trauma. She'd been barely 13 at the time. I'd been entrusted to her care, and somehow I'd been abducted right in front of her. It made sense to the professionals that my sister's crushing sense of guilt would distort her memories. As far as the paranormal world was concerned, they assumed that my sister's particular brand of hazy memory could only mean one thing. That her mind had been paralyzed by the Vemenic Piran, and that it was the Vemenic Piran who'd taken me, which was true. Well, one member of that body snatcher tribe in particular, Opal, a first-class supernatural bitch who'd been hoping to tap into my Veil witch magic while I was still young, pliable, and not yet aware of my own ability to end her existence. What Opal hadn't banked on was a defense mechanism unique to Veil witches. Namely, the ability to escape my own body before she locked me in as a prisoner with her in the driver's seat. That's one of the Vemenic Piran's particularly nasty tricks. They call it occupying the host. That's when I became a ghost. Well, something like a ghost, in that I entered a state of non-physical existence. Until I came upon Julia, a girl whose pronounced psychic abilities allowed for me to take refuge within her. She was just a kid at the time herself, even younger than me, but she literally took me in, hosting my consciousness alongside her own. In a sense, I became physical again, as the two of us shared one body. Needless to say, my adolescent years were bumpier than most. Years later, when I finally got my body back, my sister thought I couldn't see ghosts anymore. The truth was, I just refused to see them for a while. After being one myself, I was just sick of the vaporous little fuckers. As a group, they're pretty pathetic, hanging on when no one wants them around anymore, obsessed with what could have been, should have been, or what happened in the past. Kind of like ex-boyfriends who can walk through walls. Ghosts just got on my nerves. Besides, I had way more important supernatural ass to kick. These days, I've come full circle. I see ghosts pretty much everywhere. Like ex-boyfriends, once you open the door and let them back in, you're pretty much screwed. But as I explore Dean Richardson's townhouse, the still increasing sense of irritation rippling through my body confirms that I'm not dealing with a ghost. Now, I just have to figure out what the hell I am dealing with, since I have no intention of having my first customer invoke my money-back guarantee. A quick check of the downstairs shows the floor plan to be pretty much as I expected. Living room, dining room, and kitchen, where there's another staircase. This one goes down. Shit. There's a basement. Despite all the supernatural freakiness I've faced off against, basements in old houses always give me the creeps. Nothing good hangs out in dark, musty places like that. And I don't mean spiders, cockroaches, and rats. Compared to some of the things I've seen, I'll opt for cuddling up with those guys any time. Despite certain physical signals compelling me downward, I head up. Maybe I'm wrong. I try to convince myself. Maybe whatever is hanging out in this house doesn't prefer a place of perpetual darkness. And maybe it's just my cheap laundry detergent irritating my skin. Yeah, right. Still, I opt for denial, telling myself I'm just being thorough. The second floor shows itself to be freshly painted and clean as I walk from room to room, flicking on lights. Despite the quick departures of recent tenants, no damage has been sustained. In fact, the only wear and tear shows itself in the scuff marks left on the restored wood of the hallway floor. The feeling I get is that no one stayed long enough to leave much of a trace. The third floor, where there's just one bedroom, a sitting room, and a bathroom, looks basically the same. I stand in the sitting room, sighing and looking at the window, where the gleam of a streetlight reminds me that it's night and I'm stuck here until I figure this mess out. The icy chill suddenly rippling up my spine also reminds me that I'm not alone. Well, that and the darkened window suddenly fogging up, where writing appears as if traced by an invisible finger. You will die here tonight. Oh, wow. Special effects. A nice touch. I can see why Dean Richardson's tenants didn't leave any picture hooks on the walls. They probably never unpacked. I tell myself I'm not scared as I trudge back down the stairs. So, it's going to be the cellar. Perfect. Okay, I lie to myself a little. I'm kind of scared. Who wouldn't be? To bolster my conviction, I pat the crisp bills in my pocket and keep going. In the kitchen, I fling the basement door open and it slams against the wall. It makes a satisfying gunshot sound, my message being, "Do I sound scared? Because you sure as hell should be." I'm guessing it's most likely a demon, meaning a great big pain in the ass. What are the odds on my first job? But fine. Demon it is, then. The problem being that the word demon encompasses a broad range of undesirables, meaning I could be about to encounter anything from an imp to a gorgon. "Hey, fuckface," I call out, figuring that term applies across the board. I flick the light on and stomp my way down the cellar stairs. "Did you seriously just threaten me?" Of course, as soon as I get down there, the lights sputter a few times, then cut out altogether. The room plunges into total darkness. This doesn't particularly surprise me. Messing with your mind is what demons do, and their specialty is knowing what throws you off balance. So, naturally, the prick knows that dark cellars freak me out. On the other hand, I'm sufficiently juiced up from supernatural agitation that sparking a magical flare won't be a problem. I do so now, a shimmering orb appearing in my upturned palm. Dude, do you even know what a Veil Witch is? Because if you had half a brain, you'd have... I stop as the light spreads to reveal the figure of a woman. A chill runs down my spine as my pulse escalates. Oh, shit. It's her. Of course it's her. Since, like a total idiot, I was just thinking about her minutes ago, I basically served up my deepest fears on a platter. "Did you miss me?" Opal says. I saw her in this form only once, when I was 11, just before she took me. She steps toward me as she did then, tall and graceful, with long black hair and piercing gray eyes. The woman who stole my childhood. The woman who inhabited my body for 15 years. "Of course, I never really left you," she says, almost purring. "Did I? I've known you like no one else ever will. After all, I've lived inside you." Opal's laugh echoes against hard walls. I stand paralyzed with fear, my heart pounding in my chest. Part of me knows she's dead, that I, in fact, killed her. A much deeper part of me, the child who first encountered her, remains forever terrified, because she's right. I'll never truly be free of her. The light I hold in my hand continues to dim, the darkness seeping in again around me. Suddenly, there's a different voice, a voice I feel more than hear. "Hey, are you okay?" My connection with Julia breaks the spell. The orb in my hand flares back to life, dispelling the darkness. Still, the opal clone tries again. "When you lie awake at night, when you're alone in the dark, I'll be there waiting. You know it's true." I let the orb float free and it rises, light spreading. Then I use a practiced gesture to invoke the magic I've just recently learned. My pant leg lifts and the sheath unsnaps. The demon glances down, seeing what's strapped to my calf, a dagger already glowing with magic. Yep, that does it. The illusion of Opal fades, another form taking her place. I stare, both repulsed and fascinated by a creature resembling a baboon crossed with a vulture crossed with a shit ton of ugly. It stands hunched on all fours, blinking back at me through beady yellow eyes set wide by a large hooked beak. It flaps bat-like wings as if trying to blow out the orb, which glares bright enough now that I too have to squint. "Damn, you're hideous," I say. "What the hell are you?" The demon ignores my question. Instead, it tries to bluff.
"You don't really think a knife can kill me?"
As if in response, the dagger flies into my readied hand, its handle snapping into my palm. The glow of the double-edged blade intensifies as tendrils of greenish-white light wrap themselves up my forearm. "Well, it's not just a regular knife," I say. "It's an athame, one presently imbued with magic. You get that, right?" The demon studies me, then nods. "Okay, good," I say. "Just making sure we're on the same page, and you do understand that I'm a witch." Something like a grin splits the demon's beak, revealing rows of pointed teeth.
"Witches have no power over my kind, nothing mortal does."
"Well, that's just it," I say. "At the moment, I'm on something of a temporary immortality visa, long story, but I'm not just a regular witch, I'm a veil witch." The demon shakes its gruesome head, confused.
"What's a veil witch?"
"A special kind of witch," I say. "A psychopomp."
"A psycho what?"
"Yeah, I know. It's a term I first heard from Autumn. It still sounds weird to me, too. And I am one." "It's from mythology," I say. "Psychopomps guide souls from this realm into the next. But we also act as gatekeepers. Kind of like..." I glance once more at the asshole who just burrowed into my mind. Oh, fuck it, never mind. I release my hold on the athame's grip, and it shoots through the air, its blade plunging into the demon's chest. As if tethered by elastic light, the dagger snaps back into my palm again, handle first. I watch as light spreads through the demon's body, illuminating him from inside. For just a moment, I see the outlines of his rib cage and sternum. I even see what looks like several beating hearts. Then he explodes, splattering crap all over me. I jump back too late, crying out, "Are you shitting me?" Oh my God, it stinks too, like meat left at the back of a dorm room refrigerator over the summer. I start brushing chunks of demon from my shoulders when something like warm syrup starts dripping down from my hair. I close my eyes and grip my teeth. "Right, got it," I mutter. "You must have been a stench demon. No wonder you didn't want to tell me." I cross the cellar and march back up the stairs. No, I'm not cleaning up. It's not that kind of cleaning service. I make a mental note to add that to the fine print, and also to raise my rates. Fucking demons. Chapter 3. It starts to rain as I walk to the bus stop. At some other time, that might annoy me, but I'm okay with it now. As it was, I came this close to taking a shower fully dressed back at Dean Richardson's townhouse. Although that was mostly psychological since, by the time I left, the smell and stains had already faded from my clothes. A reluctant check of the basement confirmed the same down there. All signs of demon splatter had vanished. I'd say, as if by magic, but that's basically what it is. Well, if not magic, then supernatural properties. Whatever you call it, it amounts to the same thing. What's not of this realm to begin with can't leave any remains. Thankfully, that aspect stays consistent. Now, if there was just some way to keep them from creeping in here to begin with. How all of that works is a mystery. Part of me thinks it's just a matter of where there's a will, there's a way. And maybe it's as simple as that, given just how many different kinds of supernatural vermin there are creeping around. I don't suppose the mechanics involved really matter much, other than to say that the place we call home is infested and has been for some time. That part I've come to accept. But what I didn't think possible, until recently, was that I'd find myself trespassing in another realm. I'm still trying to wrap my brain around that one. It happened a month ago, on an October evening that was mild even for Richmond standards. Not surprisingly, on that night I wasn't alone in thinking it might be nice to take a walk by the canals. For once, I'd been without a supernatural agenda. I wasn't out looking to make dust of vampires, face off with demons, or expel more body snatchers from the human realm. I'd imagined myself to be just like those others around me who'd stepped out for a stroll. Of course, imagining my life being anything close to normal is just asking for weird shit to happen. At first, I thought it was one of the murals that caught my eye. A huge black bird spread out across the concrete, with golden eyes and a feather crown of bright blue and purple. It's a cool mural, one I've looked at before. But this time, it only served to draw my attention toward something else, a shimmering, a nearly invisible rippling in the air. I shook my head, making sure it wasn't some trick of the light, then reached out a tentative hand. The rippling parted, a seam opening at my touch. If I'd had an ounce of sense, I would have started walking again. But if I have one consistent trait, it's that I remain dangerously curious. I looked around to be sure no one was watching, then reached out again. This time, when the curtain parted, I stepped through. I found myself standing in a snowbound forest, surrounded by trees seemingly made of glass. Sunlight gleamed past ice-encrusted branches above, and I looked past them to see a sky of pale violet. It seemed like I should feel cold, but I felt somehow less cold than I had moments before, in this place where nothing stirred the air. A frozen world that wasn't freezing. It made no sense, but none of it made sense. I'd experienced many dreams less dreamlike. I turned to look behind me, seeing more of the same. Rows of trees reached toward the sky, their smooth bark of varying colors. Some were a shade of peach, others sunflower yellow, others purple, and some a pale green. I listened, hearing nothing but my own breathing as short puffs of air left my mouth. Any sign of the seam through which I'd passed was gone, but that didn't concern me as I gazed around. I took a step forward, breaking the stillness as my boot punctured the crust of icy snow. The sound echoed through the woods. I took another step, then stopped again, expecting to hear a bird take flight or the startled scurry of a small animal. I heard neither. I reached out to touch a pale blue tree, running my fingers up its trunk to where one tiny sprig held a miniature azure leaf, suspended frozen. The otherworldly beauty of that tiny blue bud, encased and glistening, held me captivated. It felt like the tree had given one last attempt to bloom before finally succumbing to an unexpected winter. How long had it remained that way? Months? Years? I stood staring in that alien landscape, feeling as if I too had become frozen in time. That's when I heard it. Something thumping against the ground. At first, nearly imperceptible, but becoming louder. The footsteps of someone running, followed by the sound of ragged breathing. I peered beyond the trees to see a figure drawing closer, a girl running toward me across the snow-covered clearing. She was young, maybe 16, wearing a simple gray dress. Her long red curls whipped wildly behind her as her brown eyes searched wildly for cover. Her freckled cheeks were flushed from exertion and her mouth agape as she gasped for air. Then I heard a drumming against the earth, the unmistakable sound of galloping horses. The girl was almost to the trees, where she might have stood a chance of escape, when her desperate gaze locked onto mine. In that dreamlike moment, my eyes took in yet more details. Her flaring nostrils, the tears coursing down her cheeks. The island of a birthmark upon the pale flesh of her neck. Then they were upon her. There were three riders, wearing leather tunics and leggings, each with a sword at his side. They seemed comprised of all sharp angles. Tall brows, thin faces and high cheekbones. Straight noses and square jaws. but it was their eyes that arrested me most.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?